You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited about this first episode of Brave Parent Podcast. And our first chapter in the book is called Eat, Your Kid Versus Today's Food Craziness. It's a lot to swallow. In this podcast and in this chapter, we're talking about relationships to food. And we're also talking about food itself. There's a lot of confusion about both. I think our country in particular has some pretty awful relationships to food. And we'll talk about why that is and how it came to be and how we can move past that in our families to help mealtime and the foods we choose serve as not only a wonderful enjoyment, but also ways to nourish our bodies better. I started the book with the chapter Eat because it's one area that most people have thought a lot about. So we all have some common language around it. We also have some common confusions about it. And it's something that every single one of us as a parent has grappled with. People will say to me all the time, like, well, we know what to eat. We just don't have the resolve to do it. And I think, well, I'm not sure that's even true.
Guilty.
Right? Say more about that, Lauren.
Well, I mean, even as you were talking and you said it, right? Like food, we think about all the time more than almost anything else. I feel like throughout my day, you know, what's for breakfast, what's for lunch, what's for dinner, two little boys who are constantly asking for snacks and everything else. So I'm constantly thinking about it, but it's funny how it still feels like it's one of those areas that's very muddy. Something I'm constantly trying to figure my way through.
Can you imagine that we make an average of 250 food decisions a day?
It makes that, you
know, a lot of it are just sort of inadvertent decisions. And we've sort of also been programmed to think that we should be eating the same foods throughout the day, get into these nice routines. Once you get a healthy routine to keep it up. And what we've found also is that we're lacking the diversity. You know, if anything proves that our food supply is a mess, it's watching what's happened even to our pets, not just our kids and our spouses and our, you know, partners. So
absolutely agree. And it's one of those that I feel like I'm almost even more confused about, right? When it comes to dog food and everything as well. And you try to read the ingredient label and there are just so many questions, so many options. And it's just scary across the board sometimes. Especially scary that I'm calling what we need to survive food as being scary.
Well, we it's interesting because sugar is food, right? Sugar was packed into a plant, fruits and vegetables, labeled as fructose from the word fruit. And it was never good for us. It was always a little dangerous, but it was packaged with its own antidote. And medicine is an antidote for a poison, right? So the fact that it's packaged with its own antidote, starts with an F and it makes you fart, and it is fiber, our number one nutrient deficiency. Mm-hmm. If you eat the sugar in the plant, it makes a glue-like mass in your gut that moves slowly and lets the sugar eke out a little bit at a time, which stimulates the pancreas to kick out some insulin and carry the sugar to every cell in your body where you need it. If you take it all in a bolus, if you take the sugar out of the plant, throw the fiber away and sprinkle the sugar into everything we eat and drink, including dog food, we literally kick out a whole big mess of insulin, taxing the pancreas, moving us closer and closer to diabetes. We can talk about that later in digest. And in so doing, we screw up our hunger satiation stimulus. In other words, we lose the ability to know when we're hungry. So sugar alone increases our appetite. So the food manufacturers know this. By increasing our sugar consumption, we're now at 22 to 40 teaspoons of sugar a day per person. We just get hungrier and eat more. Not that the food tastes any better than it did 45 years ago. It's just a way for manufacturers to stimulate more consumption.
It's disturbing to think about people sitting around a table, right? Like, how can we make this happen? I mean, you talk about it, right, in your book. Like, I mean, it's something where a lot of different companies and brands would not like the messages that you teach, because you're bringing awareness to that.
I know. And there are many other people touting this message, but it's something that we need to get mad about and say, why are we giving the food manufacturers our money for things that are inherently not good for us? We need to be mad about that and just say, I almost, when we were doing the little like social media pieces for this book, I had to literally go to a convenience store and buy crap food to make points in the video.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was buying contraband, like, oh, I'm giving them my money. It just felt like really bad, especially when I saw Fruit Loops were in the candy aisle where I've always thought they should be. They now have giant Fruit Loops in the candy aisle in the convenience store. It's like, all right, let's acknowledge that breakfast cereals are candy.
Yeah.
Like, let's acknowledge it. That's a really big, big issue, sending kids off to school with just a ton of sugar in their bodies from their favorite, you know, cereals.
Well, we're coming off Easter this past weekend, right? And I was packing a lunch for my six-year-old this morning, and he goes, hey, can I have the Skittles from the Easter basket, which is way on top of the refrigerator that he got from grandparents, because I'm hoping they forget soon and I can toss it, right? But I was like, I'm not sending you to school with a packet of Skittles. Like, that's not okay. And he was good. Like, he didn't throw a fit, which is good. But, you know, they see that and they get so excited. They're wired to be excited by candy and to know, like, even during Easter, he went to church and learned about the true meaning of Easter and then comes home. And all he wants to know is, when can he get his Easter baskets? What's in it? They're opening up the candies.
Well, and sugar's addictive. It lights the brain up just like cocaine when they do experiments with rodents, right? And they have the rodents addicted to an opioid. And then they introduce sugar, and within 3 days, when they put both of them in the cage at the same time, the animals go to the sugar. It's like really crazy. But I also think that we can work together with brave grandparents, and others, to say, what are some other ideas for Easter treats that go in the basket that aren't cheats, that aren't hurting your body, right? How can we put some fun things in there that kids love to play with and maybe even love to eat that are not candy?
So let me ask you this, because this was a new concept I don't really know a whole lot of details about, but I've been hearing a lot about, some people call them allergies, other people call them food sensitivities, but to Red 40 specifically as an ingredient and the effects it can have on kids. Because as I was going through their Easter candy, I've never really paid attention to it before, right? And I'm like, oh wow, this is in a lot of pretty much the entire basket.
Even yellow candies, like, you know, it'll have some red dye in it. Yeah, there is a difference between allergies and food sensitivities. And when we get to the chapter on digest, where we're talking about asthma, allergies, and immunological change in kids, we'll certainly address that more. But if you look at the trend in allergies and how that has skyrocketed, a lot of it has to do, again, with reducing the diversity of gut bugs. And we'll talk more about that. But in the list of foods that we have that are generally regarded as safe, the GRAS list, right? Mm-hmm. We have added all kinds of things. So that list was intended especially for things like cane sugar and honey and maple syrup and things that we'd had, butter, things that we'd have had around forever that were consumed safely by humans. And then as the FDA made rulings on that, it turned out that if you have a scientist deem it as generally regarded as safe, it's generally regarded as safe. So every food manufacturer has their scientists, right? So the things on those lists, and again, everything in small quantities can be tolerated. you know, if I reach down and lick the floor and put it on my tongue, now I just ate some dirt, and my body being healthy and on no medications and with no autoimmune diseases, I can sift through all of that and distribute the garbage where it needs to go and eliminate it through sweating, through, you know, peeing, through pooping, you know, you get rid of the toxins. But too much is, of course, not good, because all of that goes to every cell in your body. And when you think about all the dyes, thickeners, emulsifiers, preservatives, flavor enhancers that are chemicals that are not food, if they don't sound like food, they're not food, that we just assume are okay because we love, you know, a Dorito more than a corn chip. So we'll take the 44 ingredients along with some of those that are just proprietary chemical structures that we don't have any idea what they are. We take that because we trust that our food is safe, and it just isn't.
I was thinking about, you know, how we grow up in certain environments and what we get used to. And, you know, of course, it was very fascinating in your book with how you raised your son, Hunter, and just the difference with how I was raised. I was just talking about this the other day with a friend. I don't remember us eating anything else outside of homemade tacos. Okay, a little credit to my parents, but also Hamburger Helper. Like, those were the rotating meals.
If you looked at the ingredients in the hamburger,
I'm scared to. But I remember all throughout college, even, like, it was something that I craved being away from home. And literally, I mean, it was once or twice a week, right, with Hamburger Helper. And, you know, my parents were both working parents, right? They're the full time.
I had that too.
Everything.
That's why. Yeah.
But there was no. I feel like they didn't know, right? They didn't have the education to make better decisions, or, you know, the resources.
You know, we also didn't eat out as much. And when you think what happens, you think about what's happened with fast food and restaurant eating. Mm. And we're really only trusting restaurants to feed us food that's delicious, so we keep coming back. Mm-hmm. They're not responsible for health, right? Mm-hmm. It's a restaurant or it's a fast food place. If there's pressure on our part not to buy the stuff that's unhealthy and to put more pressure on them for better healthy choices, they will adapt. But right now, that's hard to find.
Well, and I feel even scary. Like, you go to a healthy restaurant, right? But you don't know if what they're actually serving is made or prepared in the healthiest way. Like,
or you know, they're not necessarily sourcing their meat.
Yes.
Unless you're going to a farm to table kind of restaurant, that's expensive and those kinds of things, yes. Right? My son, Hunter, who's now 28, waited for the book to come out on Audible because he's a big Audible guy. Mm-hmm. And he called me at the end. He was driving, you know, off to he's taking a curriculum to be a wilderness outdoor medicine teacher, right? So he's driving and he said, I just finished Brave Parent. I just want to say, nice job, Mom. And he said, I have to say, I was listening along, especially in the beginning with the eat chapter, the drink chapter, and I was thinking to myself, well, duh, everybody knows this. And they said, then I started realizing people don't really know this. But the reason he felt like duh is because he got it before he ever had to think about it. You know, kids believe what you tell them. They believe what you tell them up to a certain age, right? And they start to get skeptical and go, that's not necessarily true. They get a little more cynical. But if you use that early time to teach yourself and your child healthy habits around eating, healthy choices, to identify tastes of food, to know why we are eating certain foods and what they're about, and to appreciate the food itself rather than mindless eating, it's really sort of indelibly locked in their brain. It changes the ever-loving rest of their life. And it's an important thing to recognize. By middle school, they're already moving on to try to copy a lot of what their friends are doing. And when they leave your household and do things that they know are, I was at my friend's house and they had like nacho cheese out of a container that they just heated up in the microwave and they were dipping Doritos in it. And he can go like, wow, that tastes good. But he knows that it's contraband, right? He knows it's not okay because they already have been brainwashed, if you will, to recognize foods that are healthy for their bodies and those that aren't.
I think a key component too that is important to recognize, you know, I'm 38, but when we started this book, I was 37, you know, and I learned stuff that I hadn't known in 37 years, right? Despite health classes, despite nutrition classes in high school and college. But I think the key component there, especially as a parent, is you have to know why. You have to get specific. I feel like my entire life, things have been healthy or unhealthy, right? Like those are the categories. You don't really know why. You just know, like, in general, this is kind of healthy, fruits, veggies, but even fruits, right? Like you have to be careful of some things. The more you know, the more you can educate yourself on the why and instill that in your child. I think that is the key.
And you know, they learn by example so much. And because we are 55% overweight as a culture, we're all trying to diet. Mm-hmm. And dieting is supposed to promise some weight loss to help you be healthy. And you want to be healthy so you can play with your kids and do all that. But I wanted to read this little section from the book. It's just one paragraph. Many scientists indict the fad diet culture as the most powerful obstacle to achieving optimal health. Think about that. When we dive into a new diet that promises to wipe out our belly fat or eradicate our chronic inflammation, we buy it hook, line, and sinker. And when we fail, we blame ourselves, not the diet. That guilt is a perfect setup to create powerfully heightened negative emotions toward food in general. So if you're a serial dieter, you no doubt already realize it's a no-win lifestyle. Now, we're not forcing our kids to follow our diet, but believe me, they're little mimics. They're watching our control of our food, and we're serving them something different because we're on this prescriptive diet. Instead of saying, gosh, this is a really good time for all of us to take a look at our attitudes around food as nourishing our bodies and keeping our blood sugar under control and being able to slow down enough to appreciate it so that we know when we're full, to try to get our satiation back, our satisfaction, hunger, feedback loop back. Kids are born that way. They'll literally walk away from half of a cookie in the middle of it if they've had enough. And of course, parents are like eating what they've left behind. You see that? You need to know that off their plates before you throw it out, right? Yeah. We can remember who we are as part of this beautiful animal kingdom, that, you know, the animals that are outside moving around and eating from the source. We can remember how we're designed, and we have to do it along with our kids to get a healthier attitude.
I think that team approach is very important. And not just thinking of it as I'm the parent, you're the child, like, you know, it's really that team approach. Yeah. I think it's important. So Susan, one of my favorite tools that you provided from your book is the app that parents, anyone can use in the grocery store. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how that's helpful?
Love to educate. In our dental office, we do hands-on science experiences with every child at every visit, hoping by 18 to get skills, beliefs, and behaviors ingrained in children to partner with parents around healthy choices for a lifetime. And this Fooducate app has been really helpful, especially for elementary school and middle school kids.
And pause one moment. So it's the Fooducate app.
Yes.
That everyone,
like, hears. Educate, only Fooducate.
Love it.
It's a little app that you can pull up a barcode and scan any one of your manufactured foods. And it literally gives you and your kids a letter grade. And then it'll have like explanations, nutrition information, et cetera, on each product. But also, if you push the button that says alternatives, it will give you several alternatives right in front of you that will be a better letter grade, starting at the top, you know, just like you'd see A, B, C, D, E, right? So if, for instance, you know, I always pick on Doritos, but Doritos would be a D+. But there are several corn chips there that are competitors with Doritos that are much better. You might get down to a B or a B-. You're never going to get an A+ for a corn chip, but But it would be a lot better for you. So really easy when you're grocery shopping to scan without having to look at ingredients, because Lauren, that takes time. I mean, I've got you looking at ingredients now, and I think it's really important. But if you're in a hurry and you're running home from work and you're stopping to get stuff, and your kids, you can't wait to have some time with your kids, and you're trying to figure out how to feed them, and you don't have time to sit and study all the ingredients, but you do have time to scan a barcode, and right in front of you, it'll say, don't get this brand or this thing, get this one. What I love to do is have middle schoolers, I send them home and say, I want you to do an inventory. Take all the food out of your cupboards that comes in a box or bag and start to scan it and make a grocery list for your parents for next time they're at the grocery store. What is it that they could be choosing healthier for you? Mm-hmm. So that you're not just demonizing all processed food, that we take it a step at a time and start to say, let's get kids involved in looking at ingredients. And then if they're curious and they're sitting there, why is this getting a D+? They can literally push on, you know, the why, and it's right in front of them. They can read about, ooh, maybe we don't want that in our food. And I also really encourage them to Google some of the ingredients they see there and see what is that really. I mean, when Hunter started doing that as a kid, he's like, can you believe we're eating Teflon? Oh my goodness. You know, it's crazy.
I think even like younger kids, you know, I love the idea for middle graders, but I just keep thinking about my 6-year-old. When we go to the store, he's like, can I have this? Can I have this? And it's like borderline meltdown. Just instead giving him a challenge, like, hey, not this, because it's a D, it's an F. However, let's find a little compromise, right? Like take this app and
love it.
Find something that's in the B realm instead. And that's what we will get. I think it's a great way to teach them.
That's a little high-tech tool, but I think, you know, again, understanding that app may not be here in 10 years, who knows, right? Understanding the idea that we're looking at ingredients, not at nutrition information of numbers. We're looking for real food.
Yeah.
If we can just find foods that are real food. So I have these 8 food pillars. I've sort of distilled everything down to 8 really significant food roles, right? And one of them is the one finger rule for little kids like yours. If they can't cover the ingredients with one finger, it doesn't go in the basket. And I had a patient of mine send me a picture of her little kid with her finger over the thing in the grocery store yesterday and said, thanks for this. When they can start to count, instead of one finger, we say 5 ingredients or less. Mm-hmm. When they can really start to read and engage, I would say to Hunter, if anything, because he'd be like, my finger almost covers it. Can I borrow your finger? Yours is a little bigger. And I'd be like, honey, if you can read any of the things underneath your finger and they sound like food, because let's face it, if you go into like the deli section and you buy fresh salsa, there are going to be more than 5 ingredients and they're all real food.
Yes.
So that's an exception, right?
Yeah.
So if you start to look at what spills out under your finger, most of that's not food. Mm-hmm. And that starts to intrigue them a little bit. Let's Google it and find out, is this food? And you start to find out, why are they putting this in our, you know, they're asking questions. Well, it's for shelf life. It's for flavor enhancement. Mm-hmm. It's to increase consumption. Mm-hmm. It's another name for sugar. Those kinds of things. It's a fat that doesn't belong there. It's a manufactured fat, right? So yeah.
What's your view on how so many labels now are very specific with the no preservatives, or, you know, even the low fat or no fat? I mean, a lot of people, I feel like, especially in my generation, we were raised on, that's what you look for. Those are better alternatives. That's what you should focus on.
I bought the no fat craze, hook, line, and sinker. It's the single largest contributor to obesity our country's ever seen. It was the days of the Snackwell cookies and the Olean potato chips. Yes. Remember it? Remember, if you ate that stuff, you leaked out of your butt, and I'm not the only one.
Because my mom was eating them, though. My mom was eating them, and she was on a diet at the time, so I thought it was
sleeves of Snackwell cookies, like it was supposed to be good for you. And so I almost hesitated when I said something about fat. Like, we've demonized fat so badly. Healthy fats are really important to eat, right?
Avocados,
some plant-based fats. And, you know, I cook with olive oil and I cook with grapeseed. I mean, we cook with oils, hopefully not processed seed oils, but even no-fat craze created a lot of problems, because when you see something that says no fat and you taste it and go, gosh, it sure tastes, it could have fooled me. Guess why it's fooled you? Because it's a chemical shitstorm, mostly replaced by sugar and flavor trickeries, right? To give you the mouth feel of fat when there is no fat. That's a real, real problem. Now, if it says no preservatives, that, again, what are they talking about? There's a lot of things that'll say like, oh, you'll see it says gluten-free, jelly beans, gluten-free. Well, yeah, there's one ingredient to jelly beans. It's sugar. Well, not one. They have color and, you know, emulsifiers and gummies. But why would you put gluten-free on there? Just because that's a buzzword that sells, you're not going to expect to see wheat in jelly beans or lactose in jelly beans, right? Dairy-free? Well, duh.
You know, I love everything you're throwing around here too, Susan, because you're talking about like the words that are, you know, on packages, right? And what they're trying to suggest. And you've used the word deceiving several times throughout the conversation today. And I think it's really important. I mean, you talk a lot in your book about that relationship with food. Like that's truly what it's all about. And so if you actually turn food into a person and an actual relationship, and, you know, I'm big in like swapping your mind, right, with how you perceive things. If you saw that as a relationship, someone you're dating, and they're just throwing around buzzwords to try to hook you, but there's actually no integrity there, right? Like they are actively deceiving you. You would cut off that relationship.
Yes. It's a really good analogy. But I also think we have to respect so much the brain's amazing ability to start to, because let's say in your relationship analogy, you get hooked into something that this person has that you like, and you start to do that. Maybe it's a home theater and you're watching movies and you get hooked on them, whatever it is, right? And you start to go, well, I'm going to allow this because this is really fun and awesome. And we start to develop our preferences around that, even though they're unhealthy. So the same is true with food. And when we literally force ourselves, discipline ourselves to change the way we're eating toward healthier preferences, it doesn't always taste good. It's sort of like, yeah, this is okay, but I miss my Mountain Dew.
The fun's taken away, right? Like all the fun's gone.
Right. And then what happens is a beautiful thing. Our brain literally rewires little neurons that start to create little experiences, synaptical patterns, if you will, start to actually create a desire. And our brain, this is called neuroplasticity, and it's alive and well at every age. They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It's not true. Dogs learn at every age. So do humans. And we literally can revamp our preferences around healthier habits. And that's how it happened for my son, that at every age that he went off to college and said, I don't want to eat this dorm food. I need to figure out what to do to eat healthier every day. I need your help. Because he was just not liking it, right? Yeah, unlimited ice cream and unlimited, you know, box cereals. And he's just like, ugh. What am I going to eat here? Oh. There's a salad bar, but even that is limited. It's like iceberg lettuce and cottage cheese. He was like, I don't know what to do. So, yeah.
So there's a rewiring hope is what you're saying. I mean, that's good. Yeah. You can actually rewire your brain to be attracted to the good guys.
And you know, many of you are watching are nodding your heads in agreement right now because you've experienced it before. Mm-hmm. You used to like, steamed asparagus and now you like it or whatever it is, right?
Well, I mean, it's like what I was talking about with being raised on Hamburger Helper, right? Like that's what I knew. I can't recall any sort of vegetable that maybe was not loaded with butter or did not come out of a can, right? Which I know, just so to have, like to now crave.
Exactly.
Fruits, veggies, exactly. Like it's possible. But I think what is really good to talk about too, is you mentioned the 8 food pillars that are in your book. And I think when we were first talking about your book, that was the first thing that really just like sucked me in, because I was like, wow, that is a game changer as a parent. It's a game changer.
It is.
I know you mentioned one already, but you know, is there another one that's one of your favorites? And not only that, can you talk to everyone about how they might be able to get a sneak peek of the eight pillars?
Yes. One of them is it takes about 7 tastes on average to your brain to start to actually prefer food. We just talked about neuroplasticity. More for savory foods and less for sugary foods, which are easy for people to like. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that the polite bite is a way to give reverence to the cook, even if you're in a restaurant, to say that someone prepared this for us and we're going to take a taste, everyone at the table. I noticed that whoever's doing the grocery shopping, if they don't like a food, they leave it in the store. That's up to you to sort of bring some interesting foods home. We'll talk about why the diversity of foods affects our microbial health, our gut health, later in digest. But I think that's probably another one. They're all really great because I mean, those are all, I wanted to show you.
They're game changers, really.
I have a little girl in my practice whose mom is a hygienist for me, and she was an obese kid with airway problems. We'll talk a little bit more, a lot more about airway later, but she was living on Annie's mac and cheese and tater tots and applesauce. And when we use these food rolls, this is what happened. And I wonder if you can hear it.
I'm eating asparagus, pasta salad, and peppers.
That's not pasta salad. What kind of salad? Is it just salad?
I'm eating asparagus, salad, and peppers for dinner.
How is it?
It's so good.
It's so good? Okay. I love you, bye.
Bye.
That's what happened.
Like the best.
You know, you missed the beginning. She goes, Dr. Susan. She wanted to tell me, and her mom had sent me a text saying, "I don't know how I could have ever done this without you." Wow. And you know, it's just changed your life. And so her mom was like, my kids are picky eaters, so I feed them what they will. Otherwise, they'll starve. They won't starve. You own your refrigerator, freezer, and pantry. You have the credit card. Or the debit card, you have the car keys, it's your grocery shopping experience. Kids will eat. Our job is to provide healthful foods, and they will eat it when they're hungry, and in no time flat, they will love it. It's so good.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool, right?
Because it gives me hope that you're right. Like we have the control. It's our household.
Yeah.
We're making those decisions. No one else is except us. So it's important that we take that back and really see the effect that all of our decisions are having on our kids and on our health. So I think it's important.
Download a copy of the food pillars. There's a 2-page short form of it. Of course, there's each of the food pillars are spelled out at length in here, and they're wonderful to look at in more detail, but there's a short form
in the book here. Yeah.
But on the Be a Brave Parent website, beabraveparent.com, you can download today, even before you get your book, you can download the cool 2-page synopsis of the 8 food pillars that we give to all of our patients and our local pediatricians give to all of their patients. And I think you'll really, it'll make it really easy to give to grandparents and daycare providers and other people who are helping you parent your child. One more thing before we move off the eat section and close today is I really want to say that I think that the table experience, eating together, building a little sanctuary for where we get to enjoy our meal and talk about foods and flavors of foods and give thanks for the food, and to eat it slowly and to share our day without cell phones and televisions and tablets. That was a really important piece that I learned from Esther Parks, and something that Hunter, that we did in our family. And they have a little sense of, I won't call it formalities, just a specialness to the meal, that it was a meal that we prepared either together or separately and brought as an offering and enjoyed it. And there we were able to identify the tastes of parsley and dill and garlic and onions and, you know, the description of all the interesting flavors, the curry or the coriander or whatever it is that you're cooking with. Teaching kids the benefits and being able to enjoy the food as well as talk about what else we're grateful for. And, you know, I I tend to rush through the things that we don't value in life. And one of the things we shouldn't rush through is mealtime, when we've gone out of our way to prepare, to cook, to shop, to prepare a healthy meal. We should take our time and savor it, and teach our bodies also how to slow down, to chew, to eat the food, to enjoy. Can you hold that up?
Yes, absolutely.
The things we rush through in life just to get them over with are things we don't value. In our crazy, hurried lives, we often rush through mealtime, giving kids the subtle but distinct message that we don't value it. Mm-hmm. So things like this, you can just rip right out of the book. This is your book. Underline it, highlight it, rip it out, tape it up on the refrigerator, leave reminders around the house. This book is filled with some really, really fun pull quotes, so that if you buy this as a gift for, let's say, your kids' parents, your kids' friends' parents, they can leaf through it and see what the book is about just by looking. So that was fun to do.
I feel like food is, and eating as a whole, right? It's one of those topics that you can just go on and on and on about, because there are so many layers to it. So if you are watching this on Facebook or Instagram, please feel free to leave comments for Susan. Any questions that you might have, it's a great opportunity to get some clarity on this topic, to become the bravest parent that you can be, especially with making those food choices day in and day out. And would you say 250 food choices per day?
Yes. I love it. And I also think you have to remember about half of our sugar is consumed through what we drink. And I'm really excited for the next episode. I hope you guys all are able to show up for that, because if you think there is confusion about what we eat, there's just as much confusion about what we can drink besides water. And if it's water, what kind of water, where do you get your water, or how do you, you know, is bubbly water better? I mean, there's all these questions. And so hopefully the next section on drink will help you understand more about what to drink, when to drink it, how much to drink, and all of that.
Cannot wait. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent Podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible, or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.